Minnetonka State Affairs come to order. It is 9:01 a.m. on the 29th of March, 2016, in the State Affairs Committee. We have members present, Senator Huggins, Senator Coghill, and myself, Stoltz. Two measures up today. We have Senate Joint Resolution 12, resolution to put the proposition of whether or not to become the 44th state to elect, have the people elect and choose a people's lawyer, the Attorney General. That's the elected Attorney General, to put it before the voters on the November 2016 general election. We've had this before us last year. We had public testimony left open, it's now back before us. Are there any questions from committee members, as we've had all these months, a year to ponder? Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think this is something that the people of Alaska could and should decide. I'm in agreement with the forward motion on this. Certainly, just to rehearse it, it's been proposed by Republicans and Democrats alike, and we do have a very, very strong gubernatorial office, governor's office, and quite often the tension between the people's benefit as far as a advocate for the people of Alaska and an advocate for the governor. The understanding, I think, under the Constitutional Convention was that they would be one and the same, that they would advocate for the benefit of the people of Alaska. But it's become clear that from time to time they have differences, and sometimes the tension is between the general population and what the governor wants. So I think this is one good way of a check and balance in government, which our government is built upon. And so I'm supportive of this. I see that you got rehearsed some of the information in front of us, and that was the 21st legislature. I think I even proposed this. It's going back to, I think the 21st legislature is, I think, my first legislative session.
And you've only gotten wiser since. I just will read one quote. It's from November 7th, 1955. Might have made it on November 6th. It was in the Fairbanks News Miner. Senator William Egan of Valdez, he was a territorial senator, and the chairman or the president of the Constitutional Convention. Here's his quote. "I am in favor of a strong executive branch of government," and that was certainly visionary given he was our first governor, "but in order that the people might ever be able to place the finger of responsibility without buck passing, there should be a minimum of other elected officials. One office I feel should most certainly remain elective is," and it was elective during the territorial days, "is that of State Attorney General. It would seem to me that this would provide a safeguard against a strong chief executive usurping the powers of his office." And certainly, I don't think that's going to get me Senator Egan's vote, but who knows how far the apple falls off the tree there, and certainly people have their own opinions they form, but I think that was certainly prescient of Governor Egan to look at that. He certainly believed in a strong executive, and I think a strong executive branch has largely served Alaska well. But one of our founders of our state certainly saw this as, I think he predicted many of the things that did happen. And I don't know if his position changed when he got to appoint a certain attorney general, but he certainly had that position as one of the George Washingtons of our state. So just wanted to read that in the record.
Thank you. I think one of the things that people feel very strongly about is being able to have their voice. One of the things that gets to be pejorative, I think, in the way it's reported is that it's political. but it's really more about getting the voice of the people of Alaska. So it would probably put it into that political arena, and that the people would have more say. But it's been my experience down through the years that that particular office has been highly political based on what governors want. So I think this is maybe a better approach to find out what maybe the people of Alaska want.
Senator Willikowski has joined us, and we are debating Senate Joint Resolution 12, the proposition of putting the elected Attorney General vote before the people. We do have some public testimony. We had left it open from last year, and certainly it's always our deference to hear from the public. So I want to go to the, I believe it's an off-net site, Stuart Thompson. Are you with us, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me clearly?
Loud and clear, sir.
Great. My name is Stuart Thompson. I'm representing myself. I'm a constituent of Senator Huggins. Now, I was about to mention that this was covered to a good extent in the Constitutional Convention. It's in the minutes. I do notice that several of you have looked into that. I think it's very important not to reinvent the wheel, but to look over to see what the framers were looking at the time, and so we can come forward and see if they were mistaken and there was other developments. It should be clear, but it should be based on an analysis of what was looked at first. As you know, I'm sure Senator Cogswell knows from his father, there was a certain amount of study and material presented to the framers of the Alaska Constitution to look at when they were framing. I really feel strongly that this needs to be looked at by anybody who is proposing something like this, because it is my opinion that there has been a gradual deterioration of an understanding of our form of government, and this sort of ignorance can rebound, and we can just replay situations where we have an apparent republic, but it's more or less an elected monarchy or some other deteriorated form of government. So my testimony basically is pointing out that anyone who is proposing this and needs to really make sure that we have the foundation and the work that's already been done really thoroughly looked at. The idea of having the people vote on it, that's always a very standard one, but there was comments on what happens when the Attorney General position is made an elective office, and what people do when they try to get elected to that position under those circumstances. That's basically my testimony. I thank you very much for paying some attention to me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your thoughtful testimony, as always, Mr. Thompson.
Very good.
Is there anybody else here? Oh, go ahead, please. We have time if you had something else to say. And welcome, Senator McGuire.
No, I really appreciate the careful deliberation. It's not an easy, you guys don't have an easy position. And checks and balances are always worthwhile. But as you probably also know, we are not a democracy, we're a republic. And there's a reason, and that reason is basically there is some justification for putting a check on basically mobocracy, if you will, or people being swayed by propaganda to go in one direction without full thought. And that's one of you guys' functions, and I hope and I believe that you guys actually have a concept of that, and I ask you to continue with that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thompson. Is there, I have a Trevor Gutierrez ready to, oh, he's not going to testify today.
He'll okay. be testifying in favor of it.
So. Okay. Well, very good.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Sure.
Is there anybody else here to testify? Is there anybody here from the administration that wants to protect their turf? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. If anybody does join us, we'll certainly see if we can invite them in. We have a brief at ease. order after that brief, Eddie's. Is there anybody, it looks like there might be somebody in the Anchorage office that wished to testify? In the Anchorage LIO? Ms. Bonner?
Yeah. Good morning. Can you hear me now?
I'm sorry. We almost passed over you. That's why we always keep the public testimony open. Go ahead and identify yourself for the public record and share your thoughts on this resolution.
Good morning. My name's Laura Bonner, and my only connection to the legal profession is as a client or when I'd ask for advice. I'm a concerned Alaskan. I oppose this amendment to elect an attorney general for several reasons. Excuse me. One of them is for the removal of an attorney general from office would require a recall, whereas an appointee can be removed immediately. Somewhat recently, an elected attorney general from another state lost her bar license but continued to serve to the end of her term. There was another who was under investigation, and he also continued to serve. And two, I think the confirmation process provides for a more thorough vetting process and therefore more informed decisions. The public's voice can be heard by contacting the legislators or testifying as I am doing today. Third, politicizing the Attorney General's position is a problem in that legal positions may be swayed by the pressure of public opinion. Historically, public opinion has supported things like slavery and discrimination against Native peoples. There's also the issue of campaign contributions. It costs candidates a lot of money, as well as you all well know, to run for office. I prefer the arm's length distance from the political process for the selection of the Attorney General. If this appeared on the ballot as a constitutional amendment, I would definitely vote no. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Bonner. There was a Stacy Lucasen at the Anchorage LIO. Are you still there, Ms. Lucasen? Ms. Bonner, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Senator McGuire has a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Bonner, I listened to your testimony, and I've heard testimony over the years about this subject that was akin to yours, that the idea of electing an attorney general would make it more political. And I guess my question for you is, as a voter, do you not think that having the governor, who is elected through a political process, select the attorney general himself or herself? We have a little chart here in front of us showing in the cases where it is appointed, I don't see an exception to the appointee being a different political party. But I'm curious as to how, just in your rationale, because I've heard it a lot, how you think that allowing merely just the governor of a state that's been politically elected to select his or her attorney general is not political.
Well, I believe it is political. Everything with government is political, but the legislature has their own legal counsel, and which in turn basically works for Alaskans. But the governor, I think, should have the privilege of having close relationship with the Attorney General. I think it's important for him to have that counsel, or her to have that counsel. I know that it's political, but there is that arm's length distance, and mostly I'm concerned about the campaign contributions and how that would be swayed. just like I don't think judges should ever be elected.
If I could just follow up through the chair. Thank you, Ms. Bonner. I appreciate your testimony, and I think that's actually an argument that holds weight, that you wouldn't necessarily want the Attorney General and the Governor to be in philosophically or politically opposite positions. But one further question I have for you. What if the Governor were allowed to have his own attorney, his own legal counsel, in the way that the legislature has legal counsel? I would simply point out that in many cases our legal counsel disagrees with us. You've seen that play out in the news. But what about the idea of the governor of the state of Alaska having their own legal counsel? And the reason I say it is, in my time here in the legislature, I've seen an increasingly more liberal use of the attorney general by the governor of the state of Alaska, both parties, by the way, to being more their own personal attorney, to carry out, by virtue of positioning on boards, et cetera, their political agenda. And that's the part that's really been disconcerting to me. You now have our current attorney general, who I respect deeply, in the area of natural resources, sitting on a natural gas development board. We saw it under Murkowski with Greg Rankus, the lead negotiator on major natural resource deals. And I feel like there more and more and more there is a less of the Attorney General being the Attorney General of the people, and more the Attorney General being the legal counsel to the governor. And I think that's a dangerous precedent. I think there ultimately will be legal challenges, potential corruption that results from it. And I just think the system is untenable the way it is. But my question is, would you be supportive, given your most recent testimony, of a compromise that the Attorney General would be the people's Attorney General, but the governor would then have the opportunity in his cabinet to have his own legal counsel?
I think that would be more cost to the state, for one thing. That might be a compromise, but if this comes to the ballot, I'm still a no vote.
Fair point.
Thank you, Ms. Bonner. Is there anybody else wishing to testify that we've left behind inadvertently? We'll go ahead and close public testimony. In the past, constitutional amendments have had a standard $1,500 fiscal note to be printed in the election pamphlet. In this case, under this iteration, this administration, those have been zeroed out, and they said they'll absorb the cost. So either way, I don't mind if it goes to finance anyway, but we do reflect a zero fiscal note with that. Just wanted to note that change of policy within this administration. That's why a fiscal note doesn't appear, and it had been a pro forma $1,500 with her. And I think that was more just a standard placeholder, that it was going to cost a little bit of money to put this before the voters. Senator McGuire.
Mr. Chairman, have you considered putting in the language that I just described, whether it's an intent language or some other way of, so that it could be manifest in a voter pamphlet, to say that the governor of the state could, among his cabinet, his or her cabinet, would be entitled to legal counsel, and we could replace one of the other positions he or she had?
Yeah, I think the governor has all the ability to hire a legal counsel. I think they probably do a lot of that already anyway, but I don't have any objection or good suggestions to...
Well, I don't want to hold the bill up, but I'll keep thinking about the joint resolution up.
This does go to judiciary. I consider that, any consideration of that certainly. This has a journey to go to get there in these 20 days, but it's got to be a deliberative one, and the reason it's so late here in this office, coming out of this committee, is because we've deferred to some of the larger bills this year. It will pop up every session until it does get to the ballot. But I think that's a very good discussion point. I don't know how much it has to be informalized, whether it's whether we direct them or intent that the governor is encouraged to, but I think you're onto something there. I don't know how to flesh it out exactly right now. I don't know that I'd want to create a new bureaucracy, but I think the governor is entitled to a legal counsel, and I think he has plenty of staff ability to hire somebody. Certainly even the President of the United States, in addition to having an attorney general, as political as they are, also has legal counsel, certainly one very connected to Alaska under Jimmy Carter, Lloyd Cutler. That's one of the more prominent ones. But so I welcome anything you'd like to do in the next committee, if that's, if I can defer punting, not punting, but I think it does need to be fleshed a little more.
Sounds good. Yeah, we'll look at it in our committee. Maybe Trevor can do some research on how that would go in, but because obviously you wouldn't want it in the Constitution, but I think that's the number one complaint that you hear or pushback from Alaskans is that they feel, well, there's the making it too political part, but the part that, you know, the governor is the head of our state and doing business, and that they should be entitled to a legal counsel. And so I just, you know, knowing that this goes before voters and things can get twisted around, I'll think about a way to put it in. And I also, my second question to you is, have you looked at other bills making their way, or Senate joint resolutions making their way through, that are further along in the process? I do think this is ripe for consideration, and it troubles me that it's so late in the session coming forward.
This has, I think it has 18 or 20 co-sponsors in the House version, and so I think it's poised.
Okay.
There is a lot of support in both bodies, but it's always appropriately a big hurdle to get the 14 and 27. But I just want to say I'm really glad we don't have any politics in our Attorney General's position right now, that he wasn't a major contributor to the governor, he wasn't his business partner, he wasn't a political operative in the campaign, so we don't have politics there. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you.
And he's my friend. I say that only as factual information.
Yeah, good point. And to take that one step further, I was reading February 28th, 2015, Alaska Dispatch News article, where a lady by the name of June Stein, who I do not know, never met that I'm aware of, was fired, given a hand-delivered letter, which came from the governor, supposedly delivered by Mr. Zavodny. You know, given that, and at least the article says it appeared the Attorney General didn't know anything about it, how would an elected Attorney General process have changed that sort of dynamic where the governor fires a DA? I don't know the answer
sure.
to that. Maybe
Thank
that's
you.
More
Thank
appropriate
you.
For judiciary.
No, Senator Huggins, right now, a lot of that would be in an enabling statute as well. The legislature would certainly be responsible for the budget. But I think when we create a constitutional officer, this would put the Attorney General on the par with the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor. They would be only the third constitutional officer in the state. So this isn't a wild adventurism. It's only one more than we have right now. And the other two are elected in tandem. So it would really be the second in many ways. And I believe it would have the same constitutional powers and autonomy that either the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor have. That's my expectation. That I welcome if the Attorney General's office was here, they could flesh that out for us. But I think I'm correct in that, though. It'd be a constitutional office with their own that couldn't be fired or hired. The most you can do with a Lieutenant Governor is move them to one side of the hallway or the other, I guess.
Which has been done.
Yeah. Are there any, did you have any follow-ups?
Oh.
Any other questions? Comments? Well, we've had deliberation on this bill. It's not a new topic in the legislature, and this is one of three committees.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Joint Resolution 1-2 be moved committee with individual comments and attached physical note.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it's moved with individual recommendations and the attached physical note. We'll just take a brief at ease to sign the report. And Mr. Berg, you and whoever wants to represent them, go ahead and get in place, and so we can just jump right in. We might even get done early today. We'll take a brief at ease. back to order. Welcome, someone new to the committee. We're going to, at Senator McGuire's request, we're going to forego the hazing of new testifiers.
I appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. For the record, my name is Christina Andrew. I'm staff for Representative Bryce Edgeman. I do apologize on his behalf. He's unable to attend the meeting today because he's tied up in some finance meetings upstairs. So, Alaskan Wild Salmon Day. Alaskans prize wild salmon. No other of our fish plays such a prevalent role in our lives, and no other is so nourishing and appetizing. According to a survey conducted in the summer of 2011, 96% of Alaskans feel that salmon is essential to our way of life. Salmon subsistence fishing has sustained Alaskan Native people for thousands of years. Recreational fishing for salmon is a lifelong pursuit and passion for urban and rural residents alike, along with many visitors to our state. Commercial salmon fishing has been a mainstay industry in Alaska for more than 100 years. By establishing August 10th as Alaska Wild Salmon Day, House Bill 128 will encourage the celebration of these Alaska pastimes, professions, and ways of life. Alaska Wild Salmon Day will also provide opportunities to promote our wild salmon's deliciousness, purity, and healthfulness to visitors from across the country and around the world. Prior to introducing this bill, our office has consulted with people involved in the Alaska seafood marketing industry, the Alaska restaurant and tourism industries, and even representatives from Alaska Airlines. And they all agree that Alaska Wild Salmon Day can create endless opportunities to make salmon lovers out of countless visitors to Alaska. We're confident in upcoming support from the Alaska Travel Industry Association, Visit Alaska, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Association, United Fishermen of Alaska, and Alaska Airlines. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Andrew. Can you give me some a little bit of the genesis of August 10th as a day for?
Well, we wanted a day that was in the midst of the tourism that happens here in Alaska, and we were looking at July, but July is pretty crowded with state holidays already, so we went with early August. So that's why we picked August 10th, and I believe August 7th and August 24th are already taken for state holidays as well.
I was thinking maybe July 10th, that's sort of around the start of the Kenai Kasila personal use fishery.
Yeah. July 9th is Alaska Flag Day, so that's...
I'm just teasing with that. You've done your research, so I appreciate that. And we wouldn't want to slight Benny Benson, I know that. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. Well, I apologize. There was apparently some early hazing in my office because I'm told by my chief of staff that you came in and he told you with a very serious face, Senator McGuire is absolutely opposed to Alaska Wild Salmon Day, and she has her reasons, and she'll talk to your boss directly. And I'm told your face sort of went white. And you responded she would be the only member of the legislature that didn't support Alaska Wild Salmon. So I do support Alaska Wild Salmon, for the record. Two questions for you. The first is wondering if you know, as you've researched this topic, whatever happened to the challenge that Senator Lisa Murkowski mounted on the Frankenfish ruling by the FDA. Do you know anything about that? I just hadn't followed up. There was a ruling by the FDA that allowed for some genetically modified methods of farming salmon to be into commercial circulation in a better way. And I just wondered if you knew whether that challenge was successful. And the second is, what do you envision we'll do on Alaska Salmon Day? What kind of activities are you envisioning that you'll circulate this to local assemblies, local community councils, and have them come up with their own ideas and how to involve kids?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, to your first question, I do not have the answer to that. But as for your second question, I just wanted to establish a day that could be celebrated by the state, could be celebrated by municipalities, by private industry, by communities and families. And I really do see this bill as more of like a a birthday party for Salmon, and just a way for us to celebrate it with cook-offs and merchandise, and just letting people know throughout the state when it on August 10th that this is something that we prize. We love salmon, and it's a way for us to show our visitors that we love salmon as well.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, there in my early years in the legislature, people were tired of creating new days. There was sort of like a ruling against it, if you will. But I always feel like there's merit, and I want to consider what the days are. I like your idea, and I would just consider trying to think, as you said, of a commercial element of it, if there's a way to get the cruise ship industry involved and the tourism industry involved so that you're, you know, really almost like the Iditarod, you're selling goods and things surrounding it and building up kind of anticipation for it, because that brings revenue back to the state in a time where certainly we need it. And then the second point is just as you continue to work this issue through the interim is educating kids. I think that it is, in my family, Grayson eats salmon all the time, but that's been an education process, early introduction to strong meat for kids. But letting them know what it means to have wild salmon versus farm salmon and why it's so important to have it in your diet. So just thinking about how this could be integrated maybe in the final month of school, because kids will be out in July, but knowing, what are you going to do on Salmon Day, that type of thing.
In previous drafts of the bill, we had mentioned the educational component, and it actually is in our bill on a little bit more basically to incorporate education into it. But most definitely, I think, promoting wild salmon and the aspect of how important it is and how we have more benefits from it than farm salmon, I definitely think that's an avenue that can be explored with Wild Salmon Day.
Ms. Andrew, I have a question about the how you enumerate the fish. Four of them have the more formal names, but you use King, the less formal name for the Chinook. Is there a reason why you could have, instead of saying Reg, you said Sockeye, instead of saying Dogs, you said Chum, but for King, you use the less formal name and the more common name for Chinook? What's the provenance of that decision?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that there was much behind choosing the word King, but we could change it to Chinook if you would like.
Well, I think just to be consistent, or we could change them all to, then we don't have to have the debate between Humpy, Keita, or Chum.
Mr. Chairman, even in another committee meeting on the other side, in the other body, there was comments made to change Chum to Keita. But they're more commonly known as Chum around here, so.
It's certainly a marketing decision to change that, and like canola is far more better marketing name than rapeseed. That's Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. I don't see why this isn't a good idea, but I would just ask us to think of it in a broader sense of just recognizing, quote, wild salmon. We look back at the history of our state. Remember when we closed all salmon fish, we had those things called salmon traps, mm-hmm. fish traps. And I know I just was visiting with some of the Kenai River people here yesterday. And as I recall, fishing for king salmon, Chinook salmon, and the Kenai River's closed for a couple of months, means there's a shortage. I would hope that this brings and alerts us to the fact that the fish, everybody can't catch a bunch of fish and the fish survive. They have to get to their destination. I live in Wasilla. have an airplane fly around, look for fish. There are lots of places where you should go catch fish. There aren't any. And there's a reason for that. And I'm not blaming you or anybody else, but it's not just where I live. Go to the Yukon and ask people what the restrictions are for fishing. And so I would hope that in a broader sense, this helps us bring to the attention of Alaskans and others that might be interested, and that the fish are king. And it doesn't matter, I mean, it does matter whether wild or, but the reason we have introduced fish is because there weren't enough of the wild ones. And we recently built, I think, two or three fish hatcheries. One of them's in Fairbanks, which has had its plights, a great one in Anchorage, which is up and running. But there's a reason for that. For no matter who was catching them, they're catching too many of them. And so I would just hope, in a broader sense, that this isn't just about recognizing a fish that, there are lots of fish that we remember in history that aren't around anymore. And we have those things called dinosaurs, and they're a little different than this, but it's the same deal, they aren't around. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. I just have one question. What do you do to that 4% who just have an indifference or a negative attitude toward wild salmon, and what can we do to fix that?
Mr. Chair, I believe that we could probably get them to start wearing salmon hats, and that might make converts of them.
You've got a future in politics. Very good. Well, I'm going to offer an amendment, and we'll just do this informally, to change King to Chinook just to be consistent with the other identifications, and I won't get into the Keta or Chum or Dog debate. That one won't hunt, I don't think. I'm going to offer that.
I'll object only because I want to ask a question.
Sure, please.
So I was almost an adult before I knew that King had a different name. Because on the Yukon River, kings were what we called them. And we had dog salmon, which nobody talks about much anymore. So I would only think that if we're going to do this as an educational exercise, that a name like sockeye, which I think is an appropriate name, could we say known as? Because I think there's a lot of people who get confused by this in all over Alaska, myself included.
Well, given this is educational, I'll withdraw my amendment, and we'll do a conceptual amendment to draft the formal name, and then in parentheses the common usage, and it's the intent to put, given that it was changed to Keta for marketing purposes, and this is to help market and promote, so put both. Do you have a preference, Ms. Andrew, Keta or Dog?
To be honest, Mr. Chairman, I have not heard the word Keta until I came to the legislature. I've just heard refer them as Chums or Dogs. So, and I mostly refer to them as Dogs.
We'll put them both down because there is a concerted effort. I'm in my 10th year serving on ASME, and for some reason people are more willing to buy Keta than Dog. I can't figure that one out. Senator Mulikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Just looking on, I don't know that they're, I guess they're somewhat authorities, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, they have the salmon identified as King, Coho, Sockeye, Chum, and Pink. And then they have sort of the other names that we know them by in parentheses. So when I see you have them as King, Coho, Sockeye, Chum. So you have it identified exactly the way Department of Fish and Game has them identified, or whatever that's
called. If the Department of Fish and Game got everything right, we'd have some fish in the Sioux City in the drainage. So, that those are the formal names and the commons. When we've put money in the budget, it's Chinook Studies. It's Chinook Enhancement. Chinook. That's what it is. Certainly when members are looking to tax sport fishermen more, they refer to it as a sockeye stamp, not a king's, not a red sand stamp. But Senator McGuire.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chairman, I like your idea. It's the first thing I thought about when you made the comment was that if it's a marketing idea, that you could at least get marketing of education behind it, both in schools and maybe even in, like I say, products that you're selling to cruise ship passengers and so on. I think having the scientific name and then in parentheses the commonly used name is a good idea. And I just wanted to be sure we all agreed on what those were, because we've been on Keta and Dog, but so for Sockeye, Reds, and Coho, Silvers, and for Pinks, Humpies. Those are the only names I know, unless there are other names regionally, and I just wanted to say for your conceptual amendment that we should just include whatever the universe of those names are.
Is this too fast and loose for committee members? It's pretty simple concept. They'll be in parentheses.
And I want to go fishing right now.
That's in 2012, I think it was. I was in my hometown holds a big festival, and they have a trivia contest, and I was one of the panelists. And it came down to win the big prize. I won $1,000 for the Chuyak Volunteer Fire Department, and it was named the five species. So thank God. I looked at another member who couldn't name them all. I didn't have any problem with that one. When I wrote it out, I parentheses the common names too, because I was worried about my fire department getting their money. Recognizing that, I didn't want to lose on a technicality, so I put both names down for each of the five species, including Keta. Senator, does Representative Edgman's office have any objection to this expansion for educational purposes?
I personally, through Mr. Chairman, like the idea of including all of the names for the salmon. As far as what the representative is thinking, I couldn't answer for him at this moment, but I don't anticipate that there will be an objection from him.
I'm not going to bow at the altar of fishing game today. I'm just going to make that executive decision. And I don't think Senator Wilikowski is either. It was to point out that Senator Wilikowski.
I think realistically no one's going to read this resolution. They're going to get Wild Salmon Day and celebrated by whatever name they call them. So.
But you could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
But you could. You really, I hope this has inspired you to think of some ideas. I mean, if you're going to run with this and your interim activities, there are lots of ways that you could bring this to life. It reminds me, we did at one point a Juneteenth Day, and that's the collective term for celebrating the end of slavery, the emancipation of African Americans who'd been enslaved in the United States. And there are picnics that take place all over the state and celebrations, and they use it as an educational opportunity to explain, you know, what happened to African Americans and so forth. So you could do a similar thing. I mean, you could have contests. You know, I've seen in the lower 48 actually, you know, where they do statues and companies and groups will come together and design their own whale or whatever, but in this case it could be a salmon. There's lots of ways that you could really bring it to life so that it doesn't just sit in the statute books.
So I'm going to restate the motion. After on line 6, you will read Chinook, then in parentheses King, Sockeye, in parentheses Red, Coho, in parentheses Silver, Pink, Chum, in parentheses Dog/ Keta, and Pink, in parentheses Humpy, an enduring term. Is that amendment? I'll move that amendment as perfected by Senator McGuire. And is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing none, it is adopted, and we'll check and make sure on all the spellings and appropriate capitalizations and so forth before we send it on to Senator Huggins. The only other thing I'd want to say is I just want to note some of the biggest beneficiaries of wild salmon are, these are 2015 figures, in excess of 36,000 Alaskan households. That's households, anywhere from one to often a dozen Alaskan households benefit from the personal use fisheries on the Kenai and Kisilov systems. And nearly 13,000 Alaskans, often from the northern part of the Matanuska Valley, and the interior and the highway system benefit from the Chitna fishery in the Copper River, nearly 13,000 households again. There are some crossover, but many just fish one of the other fishery. So I hope that is part of this not leaving off nearly 50,000 households of Alaskans and unlike other fisheries, this is Alaskan resident only. I don't think there's a more unique fishery that benefits from the wild bounty of our salmon, of primarily the table fish, and I hope they're not too shocked that they might have to get a sockeye permit to also fish for those, but that's another subject. With that, are there any other comments on this? Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the House Bill 128 as amended from committee with the individual recommendations, and it has, I think, a zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, the bill is moved from committee with no mischief. Report that to Senator Edwin. I had many in my mind. But with that, I appreciate Ms. Andrew. Welcome, and you did a great job presenting. Where are you from?
I'm from New Stuyahawk. It's a village up the Nishigak. I believe Senator McGuire is familiar with it, as I learned from her staff on Friday. And that I lived in Dillingham for quite a few years, and now I'm currently living in Naknek. So I'm a Bristol Bay girl.
One of the few places where kings are being managed well.
Yeah, and so, very lucky. Thank you.
With that, is there any other business before the committee? Thank members for their participation today. Thank you, Ms. Andrew. With that, we'll stand in adjournment.